This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
From Atlanta, somewhere near William Street, this is the Adult Swim Podcast. Today, April 9th, 2020. I'm Matt Harrigan. With me again today, Maxime Simonet. Welcome, Max.
It's come to my attention that I've suddenly come on this podcast, and if people don't know who I am, I just seem like some random fanboy, at least in the first episode, gushing
fan of
about
what?
Meat fucking factory and the three busy
You're
Kardashians.
You're also mostly gushing about your own show.
No one knew who I was, Matt.
Should we introduce you? Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Maxime Simonet. I just showed up on the podcast right now. My credits include one person on Reddit saying I should be fired for calling calling a production of a Rick and Morty episode I did in paper costumes, poor person Rick and Morty.
That should continue.
That should continue. Someone made a video of it on Instagram recently, which was really funny. It was that like that clip of Rick and Morty where Rick says a bunch of his catchphrases.
Yeah.
He did it, but composited Jay as Morty and me as Rick in that costume. There was also a Reddit comment a few years back that said Dave Bonowitz and I were the worst thing to happen to Turner Broadcasting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was one person. You can't please everyone. You know, it's
you
really
hard. You
have
to think that one person is representative of more people. So it's like if
True.
You see one cockroach, there's more.
Yeah. Matt, how do you deal with pleasing people as a content creator? Because I feel like I'm thinking back and forth a lot of the time about accessibility, like how to bring people into the door and make them interested in something without sacrificing what makes you you. You know, and messing around with new art styles for shows, because as people probably saw in the game set clip, I'm completely changing the art style, but also I want to capture a similar feeling. I don't know. How does that go in, like, when you were making Assy or talking to them making Tom Goes to the Mayor or anything like that? How do you guys think about, like, what are people going to like? What's, you know, makes this unique? I don't know. Where do you start with it?
We should start including you on some of these conversations that I've been having with these creators so you can ask these questions of them.
Well, I can do the younger people and you can do the older people.
What do you mean?
I'll do the ones, like, you know, under 35.
I'll do the older people?
Yeah.
Why, do you think I have a different perspective because I'm so old?
No, I'm kidding. I thought you've done great on all these interviews. Oddly enough, the interview you did today, I felt like was one of the most comfortable I've heard you in, even though there's a few things that were thrown at you as zingers, you felt like, or you were unsettled. I felt, especially in the beginning, you were just, maybe because you know Jenna pretty well, it just felt like very comfortable and nice. I liked it.
It's easier when these things are done in person just because she's real nice. She's, you know, friendly and funny and...
But our last two are like Joe Pera was over the phone and he's already awkward. And Slink is cool, but like he's almost statuesque in the way he emotes. Like almost like it's hard for you to get in on it. And that's not bad, but like it's like it felt like you were on the sidelines of him as a spectacle. I really like Jenna's show, and I was telling you before the recording, and I've said this before, that specifically the McAfee interview I sent to some of my college friends, which I don't do a lot with content from us, just because I don't want to feel like a brand shill. Unless it's something I'm making, I think they'd like.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not like sending Mr. Pickles episodes or Robot Chicken clips to my college friends. But a few of them, I'm like, you gotta check this out. I think this is so good. And it's also very much my mom and my dad, though they are divorced and countries apart right now. I think they really like Jon Stewart stuff. And I know she was in that world. I think they always wanted me to do something like that. I had them over last October, my mom and her husband. And I showed them the John McAfee interview, Jenna Friedman's Soft Focus.
Certainly the mark of something good is if you want to send it to people.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's similarly interesting as Tiger King, which is now in the zeitgeist big. I feel like that specific interview has shades of that, like where you're watching this large train wreck of a person.
Yeah. What was fun about this interview, at the end, there's a little bit of interactivity with social media that pops up. that has since been resolved, but I don't want to spoil anything. Real quick, let's dip into the Adult Swim Podcast mailbag, adultswimpodcast@gmail.com. A compliment from Wayne Butler. I'll take it. It's amazing how many podcasts come up short on sound quality and editing, even groups that know better and have the best equipment like NPR and CBS. Haha, NPR and CBS. Thanks to Tina Loringer and Dave Bonowitz. They're the ones who made this sound so good. Another email from Sterling Morrison. COVID isn't a virus. He's actually an asshole wearing a puka shell necklace. I don't know what that means. Okay, we get all kinds of mail. Another email from Jenna. We'll just say Jenna. I enjoyed the Joe Pera episode you did recently.
That's great.
Warm, velvety, smooth voices, and I felt like I was wrapped in a heated blanket while listening. Finally, Dylan Salazar. Por favor, en español latino.
Oh, okay.
Beef House and Three Busy Debras. Programming note, continue. Sundays at midnight. Hopefully we'll be able to get some of the Debras on the podcast and we can talk to them about it.
I'd love that.
But today, we're going to hear from Jenna Friedman. She's done a couple specials for Adult Swim. Soft Focus with Jenna Friedman. Max, you like the show enough to send to your parents?
Yeah. Have we mentioned on the show? Wait, I want to say a Three Busy Debras thing. If you guys want more Three Busy Debras or to feel like the core of who they are, check out their New York Magazine fashion improvisation video. A fashion improvisation with Three Busy Debras from 2018. I think it's a very good video.
All right, here's Jenna Friedman. This, by the way, happened shortly before the Corona lockdown. A little bit of mention of Corona stuff. Jenna Friedman.
Have you ever been on a cruise?
I made two pilots for Adult Swim, one animated, one non-animated, called Sperm Boat. And so I'm fascinated
by just the petri dish that is.
Yeah. I've been on a cruise ship, but I've never actually been on a cruise because we shot that on a boat. And it was so gross.
Because cruises are, I've been on a couple, not really willingly as a child. And then I went on my recent trip to Antarctica. We had to go on a boat to get there. And yeah, I'm not a fan of cruises.
How was your trip to Antarctica?
It was really cool.
Was it boring?
To be honest.
It was boring.
Well, yeah. Okay, here's the thing. Antarctica is really beautiful. If you just put on like an Oculus headset and sit in a boat of ice cubes, you'll experience the beauty of Antarctica with less of a carbon footprint.
Was it cold?
It wasn't that cold. It was actually beautiful. But to get there, you have to be on a boat for like 4 days with a bunch of retirees just trying to get to that seventh continent.
Why did you do that?
It was on my dad's bucket list, and my mom wouldn't go with him.
Yeah, so you went.
I went.
Did you touch Antarctica?
Of course.
You get out and...
Yeah, of course.
Go on it?
Here's an
like
interesting fact. Yeah, they don't want you taking any rocks or pebbles from Antarctica, and they just kind of told us that, but they didn't tell us why. So I looked into it, and there are all these penguin colonies where we were docking, and penguins build their nest out of pebbles. And if you take pebbles, then you make it harder for penguins to build their nests, and female penguins then have to resort to prostitution to get more pebbles so that they can have a nest.
They resort to prostitution.
Because they're deprived of resources, and then they have to prostitute themselves so that they can get pebbles from other male penguins. So it's like a really interesting microcosm about prostitution in general.
So they sell themselves for pebbles
to the other penguins? They'll fuck other male penguins. And if you want to know what penguin sex is, maybe I have a video of it, so maybe we can link it to the pod.
Well, we'll have links in the podcast for anything that you want to link to.
Yeah, Jeff, definitely just penguin sex. It's really cute. Like one penguin's on top of the other and they just kind of flutter there.
Yeah.
And then the last second, I guess he, I don't know, is it penguin cum or whatever he does? He comes inside the female penguin.
Right.
Sorry if kids are listening, but
probably.
This is why you're here, because your mom was deprived of resources and had to shack up with your dad.
So you're from Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you tell people that your job is now?
I will tell people that I'm a writer.
Yeah. Comedy writer.
Sometimes I say I write about the tragedy that's happened to me, and then they stop talking to me.
Do people tell you that your comedy is dark?
Not to my face.
No, they don't?
I mean, I say my comedy is dark.
Uh-huh.
You know, it used to be dark, and now it's just reflective of the times.
Yeah.
I don't actually think it's dark anymore. It's funny when
accurate.
People. Yeah, it's funny when people say like your comedy's dark when like we have what's like, you know, everything going on in our country.
Is it harder to be funny or easier to be funny when the world is apparently going to shit?
I think it depends on where you are. Like, I do really well in the UK because they're morbid fucks. But here, but I think like, you know, if I'm somewhere in the Midwest, you know, a lot. I think Americans are a lot more puritanical and American comedy is a lot more like absurd and silly. And then in the UK, they kind of like darker comedy. So I guess it always depends on where you are, how people receive you.
So you tailor your comedy set specifically for the region that you're performing it in?
A tiny bit.
Yeah, a tiny bit.
But sometimes not. Sometimes I'll go harder in places that I feel won't like it.
I think you were telling me about Chicago. You would play different areas of Chicago.
Yeah, I started out in Chicago, and it's a beautiful, amazing city in a lot of ways. But one of the negative aspects of Chicago is that it's very segregated. But for comedy, it was kind of interesting because you could perform in all different areas and really get a sense of like if like, you know, the all gay audience or the all hipster audience or like the West Side, which is predominantly Latino, or the South Side, which is predominantly Black. If all those different crowds liked your set, then, you know, or like, then you know a joke would work.
Can you think of an example of a joke that you would change for a different?
I had a joke when I was first starting out, and it was a lot more based on my observations of living in Chicago, and there was like more race stuff in there than there is now. And comedy has changed and times are changed, but I had a joke a while ago that was like, you know, like I had gotten lost in some neighborhood and then I saw a tanning salon and I was like, oh, you know, you're not in a bad neighborhood. And that was like a satirical joke about Chicago's racially segregated cities. And I did it at Brian Babylon's coffee shop in the South Side and people were laughing before I got to like a punchline. But then I did it in like at the Hideout, which was like white hipsters, and they were like, I don't do that joke anymore because it's really, really old and it only worked in one city.
Why would that not work in a different city, do you think?
I mean, I also think it's different now because, like, I think in, like, 2005, there was something about ironic racism that, like, white comedians were trying on in a way that was, like, we thought was, like, funny. But yeah. Then when you realize, like, I guess when you – there's, like, a level of, like, white blindness or just kind of, like, not – like, I always think about the Sarah Silverman show, which was, like, really funny but doesn't really hold up now in certain respects. And she would admit it herself just because, like, you know – like ironic racism doesn't work if like your whole writer's room is white, you know, like there are just like things that I think we understand now that we didn't really understand then. We being like, you know, white people.
So I can't think, I don't remember something from her show that wouldn't.
Well, like her in blackface.
Oh yeah. I put on like Eddie Murphy Raw, which was great when I was 14 or 15. It's shocking.
Yeah.
Stuff is just, I mean,
it doesn't hold up.
This is obvious. It doesn't hold up.
But you know, that's the cool thing about comedy. If you're doing it right and you're on the edge, you know, and the edge changes. So it's like you want, and now we are in this moment where some people will say that like everything's so PC, it's hard to be funny. But in a way, it's like when you can break through that and be funny despite that, then it's even cooler. Well, I had a segment in American Cunt.
Yeah.
That
your comedy special 2 years
my last,
ago.
Yeah, a couple. It was actually after the election, my last comedy special. And I had a segment. The whole segment was about gender. The whole show was about gender. And it was right when Caitlyn Jenner was like coming out. And I had like a bit about Caitlyn, which I thought she was fair game because she supported Ted Cruz. But then some women, TERFs, the term is trans exclusionary radical feminists, picked up the segment and put it on YouTube as like, this comic knows what I'm thinking and she really gets it. And they just kind of took what I was saying out of context. So then when I released it on audio, I actually took that whole segment out. Not because I felt like the segment was something I don't necessarily believe, but it was like one of those moments of like, I don't want people to take this in the wrong way. And I feel like Caitlyn Jenner, yeah, she's like very hypocritical, but you know, there's no reason to make fun of her at this point. Like trans women in general, it's so much harder for them and you know, why punch down when you could punch up?
So they were using your comedy sort of as a tool to their own ends.
Yeah, and I wasn't into that.
No.
So that's a moment where like I feel like I think we should all be able to like apologize and like retool what we're saying to fit the times, especially like at the time I didn't have any close friends who were openly trans, and I do now. And so I do see the world in a little bit, hopefully more like nuanced, better way. And so it kind of has changed how I think about those things.
Do you feel like you have to educate people, or like people in your family?
No, I don't talk to people in my family. Once you're a comedian, you have to stop doing that. No, yeah. I love my family. I just don't talk to them about comedy.
Did they think you were funny, your parents?
They still don't.
They don't, really?
No, I think they do. They just, I don't show them my comedy. Uh-huh. It's like, don't ask, don't tell.
But you're funny probably around the house, right? Growing up, maybe?
No.
No.
My sister was a funny one. I was always just like dark and weird and afraid of things. She would listen to HBO, like she'd listen to whatever comics were on television and memorize their sets and do their sets at the dinner table.
But she doesn't do that anymore.
She's a banker.
Wow. How about that? She older than you?
Yeah.
So you took that from her.
She
envious of you now?
No, she's got a really nice life.
A banker.
Yeah.
Nothing funny about that. Do they watch your shows? Do they watch your performance? Do they watch American
kind of.
Cunt?
I think they might have.
How does that go over when you say mom, dad?
American Cunt was a really good hour, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to listen to it recently and it made me just sad because I was like so hopeful before the election, and I had a joke about Republicans and I was like, that party's going to still exist in 2017. And now it gives me like PTSD.
Wow. It's a provocative title. Did that give you any trouble? Did it hold
it back?
It
was harder to promote in the U.S.
Huh.
But I put that title out there because I did it in the U.K. where cunt is a term of endearment.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was hard to promote.
Why didn't you change it for the States?
Because I like the word cunt. It's a cool word. It's really benign. It's the least harmful word you can call a woman. Crazy is
really?
Way worse. Crazy is way worse. Because crazy is like mainstream enough that if you say someone's crazy, it sticks. Whereas if you call someone a cunt, it reflects negatively on you.
Yeah, that's interesting. It can be worn as a badge of honor by some.
It's a great word.
You got a cease and desist from the New York Times.
Yeah, I did.
What's that like? Was it scary?
No, it was cool.
Do you get like an envelope?
They sent an email.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the early days of email. They sent an email. They weren't actually upset about the content. They just didn't like how we use their trademark, which I get.
You did a parody. Explain it better than I can, please.
So the New York Times, I think we kind of got them to stop doing this because of our parody. But they had these wedding videos about these couples, like, and how they met. And it was, again, the early days of YouTube. So I saw one and the couple looked just, there's something off about the guy and I couldn't put my finger on it. He had this like creepy... It was like these saccharine, like, this is how we met, two people telling the story of how they met. And it was like cheesy and creepy. And he kind of had like this stiff serial killer vibe. So then a friend of mine and I, Ben Kronberg, just made this parody of it. And then the cool thing at the time, you could put like New York Times dot like vows slash Ted and Gracie, which was their names. We just put that as the title. And so then it came up with all the other videos as if the New York Times had done it. And this guy, Kayola Rosella, who's a director, was really, really good at After Effects and everything. And he just made it look like a real New York Times wedding video. So it went viral because people actually thought it was real. But if you look at it, you're like, this is not. There's no way this is real. I can't believe people thought it was real. But that was, I guess the term now is an Easter egg. I didn't know what the term was at the time, but we just kind of snuck it in there. And then it happened during wedding season. So a lot of people saw it. And then I made a web series after it. And then I wrote a script that I've been trying to make into a feature. But maybe we should do something here for TV about that.
What? What is it?
Maybe we should make a TV show about Ted and Gracie here.
Right here at Adult Swim?
Yeah, I'm pitching.
Oh, is this happening right now?
Yeah.
I sent that to Lazo when we were starting to talk about soft focus and stuff. And I think he was initially, I don't want to speak for him, but I think he was initially confused and then surprised by the way that it turns. It's really funny.
I think that's why you guys approached me. You were like, let's make this a TV thing. And then I was like, I have another idea.
Is that what happened?
It was right after the election. You guys never wanted to soft focus. I don't think anyone does.
I don't remember. What happened? Walk me through what we did.
Okay. Well, there was a reaction to some content on Adult Swim.
Right.
And then you were like, let's diversify some of the content.
Mm-hmm.
And we all had lunch. And you guys were like, what's this Ted and Gracie thing? It's cool. And it was right after the election. And I was like, I just want to make people not hate women. So here's another show I'm pitching. And then I kind of pitched Soft Focus off that.
That seems to be the consistent thread maybe in your comedy, is that you want people to not hate women.
Yeah.
Is that
for
accurate?
Now. Not all my comedy, I think.
The top line?
For this audience.
Mm-hmm. For the Adult Swim audience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was more of a reaction to the other thing that I saw.
Well, I can only speak for myself. It came to you because of a need to diversify as much as we thought that you were a voice that
no.
was funny. No, you don't believe me?
No, I'm cool either way. It works. I will take it. I do believe you. I'm into either or. The show has been so much fun. It is like a fever dream of mine, and I'm so happy that I get to do it.
What other women out there you think that are sort of unheard or unseen that maybe could stand to be amplified?
Where everyone sees us, we're all every woman, every woman over 40 for sure.
Uh-huh.
People just don't pay attention to women once they aren't fuckable, you know. Okay, look, I think that wasn't your question, and I walked you into some murky territory.
No.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think increasingly marginalized voices are being heard. I think people are interested in all sorts of content. I think if you want a list of female comedians who I love,
yeah,
I'll give you that. It's also, if you look at who I follow on Twitter,
okay,
a lot of people I hire to write on Soft Focus or consult on Soft Focus are people that I just think are very, very funny that I don't know if a lot of people know about yet. You have a ton of women.
Looking at Adult Swim from the outside when you were coming in, I mean, it was accurate. Hardly none. No women.
There you go. There are no women.
Yeah. Why do you think that was?
Because I think if people aren't thinking about it, it's really easy to just kind of self-select your community without even thinking about it. I also think forever there's this whole perception that either women aren't funny or women don't like comedy in the same way men do, or comedy is primarily like a, you know, male dominated domain or whatever. And I think I always felt with my comedy, especially because it was dark, I felt a lot of guys liked it even more than like women in certain jokes and certain types of things. I think there's something kind of cool about dark comedy specifically that is like so niche in a way, but it's like almost gender neutral. People who are dark like dark shit. But I mean, I think that was like a myth that has been debunked time and time again. Look at like who consumes horror movies. It's so many like young women are watching horror movies. And, you know, gender, I think gender is a social construct, to be totally honest. I think some people are more, I think it's more of like a spectrum. Like my niece and nephew are, my nephew came out and he was like into fire trucks and like into like little boy things. And my niece came out and she was like, I want to be a princess. And they were very, very much like following their like the gender norms ascribed to them. But also if you look at like any sort of like store or supermarket, you go to Target and you just like walk around on your knees as if you're like a 3-year-old, everything's like princess. So it's just like there is like subliminal advertising that adults don't even see, or that people, that this is maybe like an ableist sentiment, but like that people don't like, people like who aren't little kids don't notice, you know? So, but those are all cultural things put upon us to feel and be a certain way. And I think, you know, like the Generation Z or whatever is like a lot of kids are like gender fluid or gender neutral, or, you know, have just different ideas of gender than our generations have. And I think that's kind of cool and liberating. And especially when it comes to comedy, it's like comedy is comedy. Funny is funny. What's funny to me might not necessarily be funny to you, but I don't think our gender has anything to do with it.
Except for the topics maybe that you,
I mean,
that you choose to do comedy about.
Me or any
you?
I think I think I like for Soft Focus is a very particular show. But I think that like a segment on campus rape, it, you know, it's as relatable to men and women. It might be elitist, you know, because it's about colleges.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, you were automatically excluding an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through that first special, sort of why those pieces came together, how they came together.
Well, I had worked at The Daily Show, so I know how to do those pieces. But we had pitched the show as it was very bold. We pitched the show as a desk show, and my opening segment fell flat because I was like crying to camera about like a 9/11 type event or like another shooting or something. And it was like, this is our first show back after the tragedy. That was my opening line.
Yeah.
And as experimental as you guys are, it just didn't work. And then we did other, you know, we had some other pundits and segments. It was kind of like a send up of like the 24-hour news cycle and cable news, but it just wasn't as clear. And then to your credit, we had those two really strong segments, the campus rape segment and the cannibal cop segment. And it was your idea to isolate them. And then we were on the phone and I was at the airport and you're like, well, just let's think of a new show. And I was like, I don't know, Soft Focus. Like it just came yeah, out of my yeah. ass. There's no thought. There's no thought to that title.
Huh.
I just thought it was.
I think it's a great title.
It's been working. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to have like your lisp so pronounced just at the onset of your show.
Oh, yeah. You got the two S's back to back.
Soft Focus.
You catch shit for your lisp?
Oh, yeah. And that's my favorite. Like, as long as no one calls me fat, like, it's just like, she's a lisp. I'm like, thank you.
Where do they say that? Like in the YouTube comments or whatever?
Yeah.
Do you read the comments?
Always.
Always. Do you respond to them with an alias?
No, I'll sometimes use my name.
Did you on these specials on the YouTube pages?
I don't know if there was sometime. Very rarely, but if somebody inspires me. Yeah. You know, I don't like the alt-righty guys. Those comments are never fun, you know. But if something really inspires me, sometimes someone will really get what I'm trying to say in a really fun way, or like we'll have a question or get some kind of hidden thing that we didn't know people would get, and that makes me really happy.
Do you ever feel threatened by your audience? In danger?
Not by my audience.
No.
But like, yeah, I've done shows in Seattle where like men in the front row will be like tatted up and skinhead and combat boots, and I have to look to see if the laces are red, because that's a sign if they're Nazis, and if the laces are not red, then they're not Nazis.
You're kidding. I didn't know that. So you're on stage looking at people's shoelaces.
If the rest of them looks like a Nazi.
And does that change your set?
Then I try to like kind of flirt with them and see if they want to diffuse.
Wow. That's awful.
Yeah.
Scary.
It's totally scary.
Does that happen to men?
I don't think as much, but yeah. I do think we're in a new moment where you have like NRA videos pointing to like comedy shows as like attacking their freedom. And so I do think we're in a like a scary moment if you're like trying to do comedy or political comedy, just because everyone in our country is like angry and a lot of them have guns.
You seem like you hit it off, or at least he hit it off with you, the cannibal cop.
Gil?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nice guy?
I think he definitely would have eaten his wife.
Really?
Yeah.
He definitely would have eaten her.
I think he would have tasted her. I think he would have definitely killed her. Yeah.
Wow.
She was freaked out by, first of all, cops, when they have, there's something interesting about like a somebody who threatens to kill somebody, but somebody who's a cop who does it. Like mm-hmm. there's something about like you have a God complex. You're using NYPD software to stalk someone. His wife was quoted as saying he used to ask her about her running route, specifically where she would go, and she felt creeped out. And like she left him, and I don't think she's been in touch with him since. But I have a partner. If I found out that he was like on some dark web message boards plotting to eat my friends, I'd be like, Josh, like I wouldn't freak out about it because I know he's not going to do it. But
right.
The fact that she freaked out about it, it's like, trust your gut, ladies. You know what I mean?
Wow. That's so
but
nuts.
Hey, the good
nice.
News is Gil hasn't killed anyone that I know of. And he does follow me on Twitter. And now he's putting all of his energy into writing novels And so there's a happy ending. And I think if we can have more of like an understanding of people's pathologies or psychopathologies and like talk to them and maybe mine comedy out of it and like confront it without making people feel shame, maybe we can have less pain in the world.
What are the novels about, do you know?
Probably eating women. It's what he should have been doing all along.
Talking about your second special, were you intimidated or scared of John McAfee?
No. He was running for president. I thought the odds of him shooting me intentionally were very low. I was a little nervous when he was drunk and waving his gun around because that's not really how you, that's not good gun safety.
Right. How many guns were there? There were lots of men holding guns, you can see in the...
There were five men aside from him, I think, holding guns around us. But a lot of it was posturing. I think there was one tiny moment when I was asking him about his sexual assault allegations that people were getting a little weird, but for the most part, it was fine.
Why do you think he agreed to come on the show?
We gave him all the information about who I was and everything. I think he's running for president. I think he wanted to be heard. And he doesn't regret it. And we didn't really take him out of context in any way. Mm-hmm. I always, same with when I was at The Daily Show. Like, I really don't take people out of context. So, you know, I might ask jokey questions or whatever, but I'm not, if you tell me your favorite color is green, I'm not going to say it's blue. I'm
trying to think of how best to phrase this, but it's helpful, perhaps, maybe, to be a woman in these situations.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Because 100%. Because you can diffuse, as you said.
Yeah, people don't think you're fucking with them, too.
Why do you think that is?
I think men of a certain generation who maybe like grew up before women could apply for credit cards just like kind of don't really see us as people. And it hurts us in a lot of ways, but in this one tiny way, it can be used to our advantage.
So you found this great loophole, the sweet spot.
We might not get paid well, we might not get treated equally, but you can fuck with them on camera and have entertaining content.
And they would never probably agree to do many of the things that you get them to do or to talk about if you were a man.
Look, men in the same role get other things that maybe I don't get. You know, I also think that like when I was at The Daily Show, I was the only female field producer and I would get access to certain men that the guys didn't think I would get access to. But at the same time, like there is an inherent distrust of women that there might not be of other men. So other guy field producers could maybe, you know, cozy up to their subjects in a way that I don't think I ever would be able to. So it just depends on what you're looking for.
One of those men, David Letterman?
Who? I met Dave. I wrote for him for a year. I met him twice. They wouldn't let me around him. And yeah. I should clarify, it wasn't for any specific reason. He was like very checked out at that point. You know, I didn't really know him. The most jokes I got on the show were top 10s because Dave would just look at the list and choose what he wanted. The sketches, there was like a little bit, it was a little more political because there were like many producers between the writers and Dave. And so you'd write a sketch, head writers would veto it or pass it on to producers. Producers would like it or not. Everybody would have notes. By the time it got to Dave, it basically wasn't even the original thing that you wrote. So I found that with him, the most jokes I was getting on were the ones that he would just see directly. And then I didn't get a ton of sketches on. There was one sketch that I got on and the head writers had left because of whatever bullshit. And this guy, Matt Roberts, came in. I think it was Matt Roberts. Anyway, time. And Chris Christie was giving a speech and it was anti-gay marriage. And I don't like fat jokes, but Dave at the time did. And so I wrote a little sketch where Chris Christie was saying how marriage should be between a man and a woman. And it was on Mardi Gras. And somebody just yells, take it off. And then Chris Christie flashes a crowd. And we have this body double. Chris didn't really move, so it was really easy to like doctor images to like do a basically a deep fake, which is what you would call it now. But it actually, we built this image that looked so real that Dave took out the context of Mardi Gras and just had this like clip of Chris Christie flashing people whenever. And he played it so much that even like 3 years after I left, I would get residuals from that one sketch that Dave just kept playing all the time.
You're not proud of it because you don't like fat jokes?
I don't like fat jokes, but I also don't like anti-gay jokes, or not even anti-gay jokes, just anti-gay sentiments. So I felt like it was like fair game. you know, Chris Christie's being homophobic. I'm going to troll him a little bit.
Do you know if he saw it?
I think he must have seen it.
He has to have, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. John Stewart, great boss.
Great boss.
Yeah. Why do you say that?
Because he cared and he let us, like, I really, like, I did, like, a lot of segments there that I was really proud of. I got him in his last 3 years of the show, and he was like, you know, we can do a segment about anything you want as long as you're passionate about it, and we'll find a way to make it funny. And so, like, we did segments about, like, the opioid epidemic and fast food worker strikes, and we found a way, either, like, with the opioid epidemic, obviously nothing about it's funny, but Michael Che was a correspondent. I did a segment where it was like a satire, like a parody on The Insider, like the way that, like, the tobacco companies were silencing people and, like, luring up and all that crap in the 90s. We did the same thing with, like, the pharmaceutical companies in the 2000s. So, you know, it was a funny piece in that it was like Michael Che being paranoid that they were going to go after him or something, but it wasn't like lulls. But I just loved working for John because it was like a crash course in film school.
He seems like he's missed from the current comedy.
He got out at the right time.
Got out.
It's madness.
Some people are angry that he's out.
Because I think people are angry about everything.
You're right.
I've read things where people are like, The Daily Show is why we have Trump. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
What
was their argument?
I think that they thought that people kind of making fun of a certain demographic is like created this culture where it's us versus them, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, the real reason, I think part of the reason we have Trump is just because, you know, we, starting from Reaganomics and neoliberalism, if you just leave people out in the cold and you don't give them opportunities, then they'll just kind of vote against their own self-interest. Same thing with Brexit. You know, there are people all over the country that are really hurting and unable to get jobs, and they're being radicalized by Fox News, and it's like a whole sludge of bullshit that's led us to where we are now. But I don't think it's because of The Daily Show. You know the best way to explain it?
Yeah.
Jordan Peele's movie Us. It's like, if you leave people in the shadows, they're going to come back to kill you. Yeah, I think it's one of the best films of the decade. Satire is so hard, and he just completely nailed it in every way.
Are there other filmmakers that you admire?
Yeah.
Who? Tell me. The great Scorsese?
Yeah, I mean, any filmmaker, honestly, who can, like, get a film made.
Uh-huh.
I'm already in awe.
Do you want to make a movie?
Yeah. Let's do it.
You've come to the right place. Here we are in Burbank.
Yeah, I have a couple movies I want to make. Three movies I want to make. I've written two of them. One is...
You've written two movies?
I've written two movies.
And are they trying to sell them, or how does that work?
I haven't been able to. One is a movie based off of the web series.
Uh-huh.
It's about a woman who falls in love with a serial killer, and they try to make it work. The other movie, funny enough, I wrote it in 2015. It's about a woman who's in quarantine for a virus called coronavirus-associated reticular lymphopenia, Carl. I wanted like a kind of benign guy's name to be like the acronym for the virus. It's called 21 Days of Carl.
What?
I know.
Wow.
I know. I just thought after the Ebola thing happened, I thought like just the media response, the fact that like the Ebola doctor and his fiance ended up in like on Page Six, like leaving a thing. It just kind of made me like, I mean, obviously, the current coronavirus outbreak is harrowing and heartbreaking, especially for people in China. But the Ebola outbreak for people in America, there was something funny about it. And I did donate to Doctors Without Borders, and I put a fundraiser together where we raised quite a bit of money for them.
Wow.
So I'm not a total monster when I talk about this stuff.
You got a lot on your mind.
I mean, always. But I did think it was funny the way that like they turn into celebrities. The Ebola doctor kind of became like a weird celebrity in New York.
Tell us about the election night, Stephen Colbert.
I was on the election night. I think some like anti-choice guy posted it on his website. Yeah, no, I was on Colbert on election night. Everybody thought Hillary was going to win. She did win. She did win the popular vote, which is what is the Democratic, which should count. But we didn't really they didn't like want us to look at the news until we got on stage. And then like right before we got on stage, they were like, it looks like Trump's going to win.
Yeah.
And then it's me and one of the guys from the circus, and then Charlemagne, who's like a personality. The three of us were talking to Steven, and he was like, "Do you still have any hope left?" And I didn't. And we were live, which is always tricky. And so I said some stuff without really thinking, and I still get trolled for it.
Do you?
Yeah.
What did you say?
He was like, "Jenna, do you think Hillary's going to win as a woman? This is all on you. What do you think?" And I just was like, "Get your abortions now, because we're going to be fucked and we're going to have to live with it." And all these pro-life people started sending me death threats, which is actually kind of cool, because it's like, you know, at least they're coming around to the idea. But yeah, I think that's a whole other...
Death threats. Gosh, that's awful.
People who call themselves pro-life are so full of shit. Just going to say it. And I could go... I mean, I just... If you're pro-life, mm-hmm. make people have access to healthcare and information. Like, come on. If you're pro-life, support people giving people healthcare. Stop trolling medical clinics that provide women with mammograms and STD screening and, you know... So care about lives outside of the womb if you're pro-life. I'm sorry. It's just, it's crazy. It's so, there's so much propaganda and misinformation out there that makes me really sad.
But you are, you're the boots on the ground when you're getting death threats from lunatics online. Does that scare you? Or do you just brush it off?
I mean, when it's like invoked on podcasts. No, all women get them. All women get them online. All women get them. But yeah, no, it's you know, it's tricky when you're out there. You don't want people to hate you, but you know, it is dangerous.
You're in a position where you want people to like you, but you don't care if they hate you.
I don't want to get killed. People are going to hate, people are going to like, for whatever, whoever, you know, you can get on stage and if you look like someone's ex or like, you know, you can't control how people think.
Yeah.
But you want people to be kind and respectful to you and to each other.
Would you advise young girls to get into this career path that you're on?
No.
No. Why not?
I mean, I don't know. Do what makes you happy within reason. Uh-huh. I think it's a tough career.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of success. I've had a lot of failure. I enjoy what I do. But then there's this little part of me that in 2006, when I was approached by YouTube to work in their like strategic growth or some department in Chicago, I just was like, I want to be a comedian. That was stupid.
Wow. They wanted you to...
I used to work in a consulting firm. And so I left the consulting firm and a headhunter was like, do you want to interview for this job? And I was just like, meh, it's YouTube. And I feel like I could have made a lot more change happen there than I do in my comedy.
Do you have side hustles? What do you got going on?
My feet on WikiFeet. I make money. I'm just kidding.
That's a real thing, right?
I think it is.
Yeah, no, it is.
I don't know. I would get paid to, you know, show people my feet, but I'm just not there yet. No, I'm doing fine. Everything's cool. Girls, if you want to go into comedy, it is really fun. It's a lot better than it used to be. And, you know, go for it. Life is short, especially now. Can I tell everyone we're doing another self-focus?
Yeah.
We're doing another self-focus.
All right.
I'm really excited about it.
Can't tell anybody what's happening in it.
Can't tell anybody what's happening in it. It's really fun. I very much enjoyed performing at the Adult Swim Festival and having like guys dressed as Pickle Rick just listening to me talk about femicide. It's like, you just don't get that opportunity.
Yeah.
It's like I never would get to talk to those guys, and the fact that I do is so enjoyable.
Did they seem to like you?
Yeah.
They did.
I get even one of the guys who we kind of trolled in our segment about harassment in gaming, he'll like message me and be like, do you need an intern?
Can I
intern for you? And I'm
That's nice.
Yeah.
Did the other characters who've popped up on the show stay in touch?
No, I mean, I'll get the occasional tweet. Nobody at least has seemed too upset by being in anything yet. Yet.
I thought those college kids.
They were really good sports.
They were good.
I think one of them, not the one we accused of coming in the doll, but I think another one like wanted to work on the show or something.
That's nice. And no follow up from Mr. McAfee.
No, but he did say he was going to eat his own dick at the end of 2020, and I think he's full of shit.
Yeah.
Because Bitcoin is not at $1 million.
Not yet.
And I wish we had, my one regret is I wish we had gotten like the rights to his dick eating.
Right.
For the network, just, you know, to have it on your live stream.
Gosh, that would be fantastic. Can we work on that for this next Soft Focus?
I don't think he's going to eat his dick.
Okay, but if he does, we should be there.
I agree. I can make a phone call right now and see if we can make this happen.
Yeah, we would like the exclusive live streaming rights to John McAfee eating his dick.
You might have to pay for it.
Well, of course.
Can
no price
message
is too high.
Him on Twitter?
Please do.
Okay. I'll just make a note of it.
Wow.
Wait, why don't we just do it here? So, McAfee.
Yeah. You're tweeting it now. This is exciting.
I'm not tweeting it. I'm DMing him. Should I tweet it?
No, DM him. That's probably the fastest way.
Hey, John. I'm talking to a very powerful person at Adult Swim.
That's right.
And they would like to buy the rights to your dick eating on December 31st.
The exclusive live stream broadcast rights.
The exclusive live stream broadcast rights.
Global.
Exclusive live stream global broadcast rights to your dick eating on December. Are there 31 days in December? Yes.
Yeah.
2020. Any interest?
That's fantastic.
Hope all is well otherwise.
Yeah.
I go, hi, John. I'm talking to Adult Swim, and they would like, I took out the very pipe.
Of course. Yeah. You want to be
talking
serious.
To Adult Swim, and they would like to buy the exclusive live stream global broadcast rights to your dick eating on December 31st, 2020. I didn't capitalize the D in December. Sorry, nerds. Any interest? Hope all's well otherwise. So I DM'd him, and now I'm just sending you that so you can attach it to this if you
Great.
Want. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll follow up on this.
There you go.
By the time this podcast is edited and produced, we'll have an update.
Yeah, that would be cool. Cool.
All right. Jenna Friedman, thanks for subjecting yourself to this.
Are you talking to them or me? Guys, thanks for subjecting yourself to this.
All right, there you have it. Jenna Friedman. She's working on another Soft Focus as we speak, along with some other stuff for the network. Did you meet her?
I have. And I thought it was great. I really wanted her to like me. I don't know if she gives a shit about me, but I really wanted her to like me.
Why?
I think she's cool, man. And I want everyone to like me and respect me. I've got a...
Man, she's cool, man.
Man, she's cool. She's one of those cats. She's one of them jellicle cats.
Visit AdultSwim.com or download the Adult Swim app to watch not only Soft Focus, but some of the things Jenna and I and Max were just talking about. It's free. It's good. Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, Android, iOS. You can also watch our live streams. Last Stream on the Left, Truth Point, as seen on Adult Swim. Blood Feast. That's Max's show, Blood Feast. Fish Center, of course. Music from today's podcast is a track called Percy Thrills, The Moondog, by Turquoise, from their performance live on Fish Center. Thanks to Dave Bonowitz, Christina Loringer for putting this podcast together. Send your requests, comments, concerns, criticisms to AdultSwimPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.